Good afternoon. The program is Live and Local. It's your connection to local performances. I'm Kevin Kelly. On the program today, coming up, I will be talking with Milton Scott, who is the music director of Opus 24, which is a choral ensemble based in Decatur, presentation of the Decatur Choral Society, and they're giving their annual spring concert, which they're calling Of Thee I Sing, a week from tomorrow, Tuesday, May 13th, at Central Christian Church in Decatur. As always, it's a pleasure to talk with Milton, looking forward to hearing some of the chorus's prior performances, previous performances, as we lead into our talking about what they're doing on this particular concert. But first, I will be talking with conductor of a very different ensemble, the Bloomington Normal Youth Symphony, who are giving their spring concert a week from yesterday, Sunday, May 11th, on the campus of Illinois Wesleyan University in Bloomington. Here is one of the pieces that will be on their program. Just heard some music by Gustav Holst from his suite of orchestral pieces called The Planets. It's the opening one, Mars, the Bringer of War. This performance was by the Berlin Philharmonic Orchestra, conducted by Sir Simon Rattle. And this will be one of the pieces on the program, Sunday, by the Bloomington Normal Youth Symphony, which will happen on the campus of Illinois Wesleyan University in Bloomington, 7 o'clock Sunday night at Westbrook Auditorium in Presser Hall. And on the phone with me is the music director and conductor of the Bloomington Normal Youth Symphony, Deanne Bryant, making your return appearance to Live and Local. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
So I had asked you, I think in one of our email exchanges, if when you told me what was on the program, which is a lot of challenging stuff, if everything was the real thing, by which youth orchestra conductors mean, is this a professional original, or was this an arrangement for students? And I think you said the piece we just played is the only one on the program that is arranged by somebody.
Right. It is. I'm just now pulling that out because I didn't have that in front of me. Clark McAllister. And it's a decent arrangement, so we're having a good time with it, and the kids are enjoying playing the big full sound with all the brass and everything. So
let our listeners in to part of the art of programming for youth orchestra. Why does it make a difference whether one does an arrangement of something or the original of one of the classics?
Well, we try to do mostly original music, but sometimes there are sections of the original pieces that are just beyond the level of what we would expect of our students to be able to play, and instrumentations, because when people do the arranging of these things, they take into account what your typical instrumentation might be, and then that makes it more playable. It also means that they're in the right keys for what you're using.
Meaning that some keys can be a little bit more challenging for younger players to play in?
Well, they've come a long way with that, as you know. It used to be if you ordered a major symphony or something, the wind keys could be in anything. And now you can get most things in a key that matches, B-flat or F, French horn. So holds should not be a problem, but the older pieces would be a challenge in that way.
Oh, for example, so French horns, although the instrument is pitched in F, sometimes the parts would be written in some other key, and professionals are expected to transpose these things on sight.
Right, and there are some things that we have like that, and if we have the type of player, the more experienced players, it's good for them to be working on that transposition. But you have to be careful to be sure that you're not going beyond what their level is too far.
Right, sure. So a little bit more on the art of programming. You've got some music by Copland, Wagner. Of course, we played Holst, a concerto by Boccherini, and then some music by a Czech composer named Julius Fučík. How do you go about deciding what to play in a given year?
Totally on who I have in front of me. If I know we have strong brass, that's a year that we will definitely pull out pieces that fit what we have instrumentation-wise and give them good parts to play. If you go back very far musically, you won't have all those parts. Woodwinds and strings, they always get a lot to do. But and that's why our program is heavy on pieces that have brass parts.
Because you've got a good brass section this year.
Oh, yes. Unfortunately, my four French horns are determined to graduate.
Well, if they're seniors, I can understand why they might want to do that.
Yeah, every year that happens.
Which doesn't mean you won't have any horns next year. It just means you've got to recruit new ones, right?
Right. Somebody else will have the opportunities, so that works. I call this concert a concert of contrast, because if you look at the dates of the composers, Boccherini was born in 1743, Copland passed away in 1990. So it's a huge span of music.
And Wagner is somewhere in there, Holst a little more recent, and then, I don't even know when Julius Fučík was around.
1872 to 1916.
Okay, so he sort of fits the bridge as well.
Yeah, it sort of just goes down the line. They're not in that order, but they're all covering the dates between 200 years. And then we have the banner to start with, which is, fits in there too.
The banner meaning the Star Spangled Banner.
Definitely.
Yeah, which is a tradition for your orchestra, I think.
A big tradition that was started by Howard H. Rye when he started the symphony. He felt very strongly about patriotism, and we've carried on that tradition for the last 25 years. And we always use a senior conductor for that piece.
Hmm. So this year that's going to be?
Quentin Breach, and he's a senior at Normal Community. He's going into music education, and he's been in the symphony for 3 years, which is wonderful.
What does he play in the orchestra?
Trombone.
Oh, good. And tell me a little bit about, I know you were instrumental, no pun really intended, in developing a string program in the Bloomington Normal districts, I guess specifically the Unit 5 district in Normal. Does there continue to be a strong string program in the area schools?
Oh my goodness, Kevin, it is such a thrill. Our schools have all kinds of string players, and it's just amazing to watch. Normal Community and Normal Community West each have 3 classes of string players in their curriculum. So when the freshmen go in, they have a freshman orchestra, and then they go on to the next orchestra, and the top ones are in their chamber groups. Just amazing. There's like 90 string players in each of those buildings, and that's started back when I started the program.
Wow, that's fantastic. And again, for listeners who may not realize why that's even important, there are so many school districts in our area and throughout the country that have no string programs in the schools at all.
Right. And Bloomington is very strong, too. Their program has blossomed and doing very well. So we're kind of in a little island here of a lot of string playing going on, which is great for the Youth Symphony because we get the best of the best.
Well, let's play another of the pieces that's going to be on the program. It's one that I mentioned a couple times, and many listeners may not know this name. He's a Czech composer, Julius Fučík, spelled F-U-C-I-K, with a little doohickey on top of the C. And this is a wonderful piece of his that doesn't get played all that often, I guess. But it's a great deal of fun. Tell me how you picked this particular piece of his, Entrance of the Gladiators.
I programmed this one other time about 5 years ago, and it was just, I needed a variety of something, and I just stumbled across it and thinking, oh my gosh, is that fun, like you said. And especially one of my cellists just absolutely over the moon loved this piece and went to his school and was telling his conductor about this piece, and she didn't recognize the name, which most of us don't. And then he played it for her. Well, yeah, I know that. And the same feeling is with the group this time, and we're actually ending our program with that song. And it'll be a fun, we're even going to do an encore. It'll be a fun thing to end the concert with.
Is this one of those that challenges the brass?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, the trombones are in hog heaven.
Brass players especially always like to get good parts because, you know, brass players don't always have what right. they would call good parts in orchestral music.
At our very first rehearsal this semester, we're all gathering in the room, slowly coming in, and the folders are on the stands, and our young man that plays tuba came in, he opened his folder, and jumped up and down with such excitement because of the music that we programmed with the Holtz and the Wagner and the Fučík.
Wow, fantastic. Well, I'll have to keep that in mind for programming my next youth orchestra concert. These are things that went over because actually I don't think I've ever played any of these with the youth orchestra in Champaign-Urbana. So you might have to pull them out.
Well, with the Lohengrin, the French horn, that's your answer. If you've got them, then that's what you play to me. It's really difficult for the violins, but for the brass, it's just right where they love to live.
All right, here's music by Julius Fučík, his entry of the Gladiators, played by the Czech Philharmonic Orchestra, conducted by Václav Neumann, on WYLL FM 90.9, the show's live and local. We'll be right back. The Czech Philharmonic played music by Julius Fučík, his entry, The Gladiators, A March, which will be performed by the Bloomington Normal Youth Symphony in their concert Sunday night at 7 o'clock on the campus of Illinois Wesleyan University. And my guest this portion of Live and Local is Deanne Bryant, whose conductor the orchestra has been for a long time. And now you're a string player yourself, violinist, violist.
Yes.
There are some youth orchestra programs I know who really want to be sure the conductor is a string player. Why does it matter?
I think it becomes more automatic to watch the bowings and be able to finger the parts. You can have other people do it, but it's when you get in rehearsal and all of a sudden the bowing isn't working, a string player can take the minute to fix it quickly. When you're working with young people, if you have a professional, then they get to do that themselves.
Because their section leaders are such that they can just turn around and do it. How do you, what are some of the ways in which you empower your students to be leaders, let's say, of that sort? You know, you have section leaders, I assume.
Yes.
And what are the sort of things that you expect them to do besides just sit in their chair and play the parts?
Well, our concert mistress is in charge of tuning the orchestra, and of course the oboe has to be on task, ready to do that each time, so you've got leadership there. But further than that, the heads of each section make such an impact on how they are going to be playing. If we do a sectional, then they have a chance to work together to be ready for the rest of the group to play together. Other than that, well, the section leaders will do sectionals. That's just one of the things that works really well. The only exception to that probably would be the second violins, because they're not as ready to do that leadership role. So we'll have someone else come in and do that leadership role. But the rest of the section are highly capable of doing that.
So they actually they lead their own sectionals. That's terrific.
Yep.
Tell me about your concerto competition. You always have someone who is going to play a solo with the orchestra, and this year is no exception.
This was started again by Howard H. Rye, who founded the symphony from the very first year, and this will be our 25th soloist. And his name is Alexander Sue. He's a cellist playing the cello concerto number 9 by Boccherini. The competition is held in February so that we can get the music and be ready to accompany that soloist. And it becomes quite challenging because they all really do very, very well. To choose a winner, we do give a monetary reward and we do a runner-up with a monetary reward. And depending on the competition, we might even do a third place with a monetary reward. But the first guy is the one that gets to play with the orchestra.
And your runner-up this year, a fellow named Pierce Hadley.
Yes, Pierce plays French horn and did a beautiful job with the Mozart. And I just wish there had been time to put two solos on the concert.
Well, I'm sure it took has taken plenty of time to rehearse the rest of the music on the program.
Yes.
When does your orchestra rehearse and how often?
We rehearse every Monday night from 7 to 9. We rehearse from 7 to 8, then we take a little break, and then we come back and finish the evening together. So we have basically 10 or 11 rehearsals and a concert. And then second semester, same thing.
And kids come from how far away and what range of grades?
Well, we have people from, it's either 11 or 12 different schools. We have, for the first time, we have two young ladies from Hayworth coming to play. We have two people coming down from Fairbury. We have kids from in town. I think those are the out-of-town students. And we have several homeschooled. We have two students who've already been members of the Youth Symphony, and this year have been freshmen at Wesleyan, and they've wanted to continue playing.
Wow.
Which is delightful, especially since one was our tubist.
Mm.
And then we have some younger members who, if you heard the group, you would not know they were younger. It just absolutely floored me that we have the number of junior high, basically eighth graders, in those string parts. And one of our trombones is an eighth grader. And they do a phenomenal job. And I also had a young lady come and audition for me this summer. stood in my living room and played a 15-minute major concerto movement, 10 years old, and she's sitting in the first violin section.
Wow. What grade is a 10-year-old in? About fifth?
Something like that. Fourth or fifth. She's homeschooled, so I don't know where she ranges as far as grade is concerned. Really sharp little gal. So there's a lot of variety in there, but the intensity in rehearsal is as strong as what you would find in a pretty professional group.
Yeah, well, the rehearsal intensity, you know, you've got when you've got players who are being stretched, as these kids are, has to be considerable, because that's kind of the major point of a youth symphony, isn't it?
Right.
To really stretch kids beyond perhaps what they get to do in their school groups every day.
And we have 18 seniors this year, so your leadership, I just feel so strongly about the mentoring of the younger students through the program, with how the seniors lead and do not, they're always supportive of the younger players because they know what it took for them to get in. So it's a win-win.
And I would assume that you're band directors and orchestra directors in the area are always encourage their students to participate in the program, your program?
By and large, very much so. The string teachers, I will get phone calls about who they feel are ready, and the same thing with the winds. And then I have a good contact with private teachers as well. So it helps, because you really, they need to be studying privately to be successful in a group like ours.
That was going to be my next question, if most of your students do take private lessons.
Yes, definitely.
Because they need help beyond what you can do standing on the podium.
Exactly, and when you have 10 rehearsals and you're playing the kind of music that we do, you have to get through most of it every rehearsal, because if not, it'll be 2 weeks or maybe 3 weeks before you've played it together.
Right.
So with the older leadership that you have, that allows you to do that, because you can keep things moving. There's not a minute that it isn't moving. So the younger ones, and I tell them when they come to audition, first rehearsal, you will feel lost. Just count on that. Second rehearsal, you'll get some notes. It's coming. If you're not comfortable by the end of the third rehearsal, then come and see me and we'll talk about it. Because I feel that by then they'll start to be comfortable with what we're doing.
And, of course, the assumption is that they'll be practicing during the week.
Exactly.
They better be.
Yeah, and they'll immediately take their music to their private teachers.
Yeah.
The school teachers will not have time to do this, but that's the private lesson is so important for that.
Well, let's go out with a piece that's quite different from either of the ones we've played so far. This is one that I am going to assume that your kids had a good time with, from Aaron Copland's Ballet Rodeo, The Hoedown. It's the fourth of the four dance episodes from that ballet. You're also doing one called The Saturday Night Waltz. What are some of the special challenges of this piece?
The Hoedown is very challenging, because when he wrote that, he didn't care how many notes the musicians played. They would get five notes and another instrument comes in. So the need for independent playing is extremely strong in that piece. And that creates a challenge. I think the strings have the easiest part in that particular piece, because they're all playing together at once. The winds really have to be on the counting and be ready for their solo entrances, which are multiple.
Well, let's give a listen. This is a group that handles it all quite well, the Buffalo Philharmonic Orchestra, led by Joanne Folletta, and I suspect you will find that the Bloomington Normal Youth Symphony handles it quite well at their concert Sunday night at 7 o'clock in Westbrook Auditorium in Presser Hall on the campus of Illinois Wesleyan University in Bloomington, their annual spring concert. And conductor Deanne Bryant has been with the orchestra since 1995. She's my guest on Live and Local. Thanks very much for joining us on the show, as always.
Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you. a performance by the Buffalo Philharmonic Orchestra conducted by Joanne Folletta of The Hoedown from Aaron Copland's Ballet Rodeo here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. That program, or that piece rather, will be on Sunday night's concert by the Bloomington Normal Youth Symphony. Westbrook Auditorium, Presser Hall, Illinois Wesleyan University's campus in Bloomington. The concert will start at 7 o'clock. Our broadcast today is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, breathing life into the history of our nation's musical past through exhibits, guided tours, and performances at the University of Illinois. More information is available, and visits can be scheduled at 217-333-4577. Our next segment will be a conversation with Milton Scott, who is music director of the choral ensemble based in Decatur called Opus 24. They're giving their spring concert a week from tomorrow at Central Christian Church in Decatur. Here's some music from their spring concert of a year ago. Opus 24, directed by Milton Scott. Music by Bob Chilcott called Come to the Great World here on Live and Local from their spring concert last year. And Milt is my guest this portion of Live and Local. Pleased to welcome him back to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
So it's always nice to hear the choir. You're kind enough to bring in very recent performances of whatever you did. Usually we're sort of a quarter later, so if you normally we would have heard something from the spring concert in the fall, but we missed our connection.
We did.
Entirely my fault, as I recall. So we didn't get to say anything about your winter concert, but I assume it all went well.
The winter concert was great.
What was your theme for that one?
It was called "How Great Our Joy," and we did some really nice works. We had a string quartet from Springfield join us. And we did some very nice seasonal music, a few pieces that are not necessarily Christmas season, but have that nice feeling in the church where we perform, that they just sounded great. And so it went very well.
You've been regularly in a couple of different churches. Which one was that?
Well, this was at St. Patrick's Catholic Church, which is sort of our regular venue. The one we're going to be this spring is Central Christian Church because the Catholic Church was unavailable. They're doing a big Catholic school instrumental music program that day and night.
The nerve of them.
I know.
To bump off of Opus 24 from their schedule.
Bumped out the old people for the... but we are singing in a church we've sung in before, Central Christian, which is a long church as well as far as architecture. And so I think we're very at home there too.
And I assume that you've chosen these places because of acoustics.
Well, acoustics and seating capacity, because we have between 500 and 50 to 600, and we've kind of had to set up chairs at St. Patrick's, and we've expanded a bit, so we have to be very cognizant of the seating. But acoustics is big for us.
The seating issue is a nice one to have.
It is. It's very nice.
Some ensembles have to go the other way, where you don't want to have them be too big or the audience gets swallowed up.
Right. Or you can have 50 people and it'll look like you have 20. So,
yeah, that's never really, really encouraging. So tell me about the program of next week. You always do have themes of some sort.
Well, I haven't always, but in the last couple of years, I have tried to pick something out of the titles. But this year, I decided I wanted to do an all-American concert. So I'm calling it Of Thee I Sing. And it includes folk songs, some patriotic, of a whole variety historically as well. It's the 200th anniversary of the Star-Spangled Banner. So we are starting our concert with the audience and us singing it. We were kidding each other the other day about getting our standing ovation early. So, and also it's the 70th anniversary of Wizard of Oz. So we're also doing a wonderful arrangement of Somewhere Over the Rainbow. But we have some spirituals. And
I wasn't aware of either of those anniversaries.
Well, I wasn't actually either till the concert started taking shape. So I'm real, real pleased. I mean, we're doing Shenandoah and Hymn for America, Homeward Bound, Deep River. There are a lot of things that people recognize. And so it's been accepted very well in the choir as well.
I imagine that as with most choral ensembles, that spirituals figure fairly frequently on your programs?
Well, not necessarily. When I was in college and beyond, you know, spirituals were just sort of tacked on a concert as encores in many situations. In later decades, they've become really a body of literature within the concert. This, we are doing Ain't Got Time to Die, we're doing Deep River. They all have such significance in our history that they're just good pieces to sing. So that's one reason I've chosen them. And they're just really, even in their solemnity, they're just fun to sing. The choir really gets into that.
I'm going to say something. I'm not exactly sure it's true. And you can correct me if you know that it's not, or if you know that it is, and that is that perhaps there was a time when non-black choirs might have avoided doing spirituals for various reasons.
I think so. I think a lot of conductors did not feel comfortable in doing them. One of the blessings in the last several decades is there have been so many wonderful black arrangers who have given conductors guides on how to sing spirituals and gospel music. But they had avoided them, whether it was a racial situation or just, like I say, discomfort of doing them or didn't feel that they were really music. All of that, I think, has changed for the better.
I remember going to a workshop myself. It's been many years ago now, with a fellow by the name of Roland Carter, mm-hmm. who is a composer and arranger himself. And I think his topic was, at least to an extent, the black spiritual. And among the questions that people asked was, how do you approach the language? Because if you see certain arrangements, they'll often say, you know, instead of them, they'll say dem or these and those and all this stuff. And I've always remembered his answer, which was that you should not slavishly try to duplicate that kind of dialect, but you should do whatever would be sort of vernacular pronunciation to whoever the choir is.
Well, there is a guide in the arrangement we're doing of Ain't Got Time to Die, which is Hall Johnson, and he specifically says, do not put a T on ain't and let this go, you know, and work for this kind of effect. And I think that's very important, very important.
Spirituals are fun to sing.
They are great. They are great.
Especially if it's a good arrangement.
Yep.
What do we have next? We have something from the same concert we just heard from.
Let's see. I think we were going to do...
Track 8, was it?
Track 8, Gabriel's Oboe. This was an arrangement by Craig Hella Johnson for choir and oboe and cello.
Now you say an arrangement, so this is from...
Well, the music is from the movie The Mission.
Oh, that tune.
Uh-huh. And Craig Hella Johnson, we heard this on his concert a couple of years ago. And I decided, you know, this would be kind of fun for the choir to hear because the first few rehearsals, they'll say, I've heard this before.
So this is the best known tune from that film?
I think so, yes.
Well, I'll tell you as soon as we
we hope it's recognizable.
Yeah, we'll find out. It's Opus 24, led by Milton Scott, who's my guest on Live and Local, this portion of the program. They will be giving their spring concert on Tuesday, May 13th, in Decatur. Music from the film The Mission, here on Live and Local, performed by Opus 24, presentation, their concerts are, of the Decatur Choral Society. Of course, they're a choral ensemble, a community choir based in Decatur, and they'll be performing a week from tomorrow at Central Christian Church there. This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly, and support for our program today comes from the Prairie Ensemble, presenting their next concert on Saturday, May 10th at McKinley Presbyterian Church in Champaign. The international program will feature koto soloist Yoko Reikano Kimura and Mendelssohn's Italian Symphony. The concert starts at 7:30 with a concert conversation at 7. Details are available at prairieensemble.org. Milton Scott is my guest this portion of the program, and that might have been the tune I was thinking of, but I think there's another one also from the Mission.
The more I sit here, I think you're right, and I think that one is on the CD I was alluding to. But yeah.
The flip side of the 45 RPM record.
That's right.
Anybody the knows what we're talking hits. About. Yeah, it was quite a. It's been a long, long time since I've seen it, and I think you said you haven't actually seen it. I remember it being a beautiful and ultimately heartbreaking movie, not to give away the ending, but if you ever decide to go see it.
Okay, I will.
So the concert's next week, and this one came from last spring.
Right, last spring.
What was your theme for that one? Assuming you had one.
I'm sure we did. What does it say on the CD there?
You have to look. You're like me. You have to resurrect
Was called concerts. A Feast for the Ears.
That's sort of generic.
It is. It is. But it had lots of different instrumentalists, lots of different styles of music. And so that's how I chose the title.
Those are sometimes the best titles, though, because they can encompass so many different possibilities.
Well, I always write a thing in the program called From the Director, and I alluded to going to a banquet, a feast, and you pick and choose what you like, but you always ultimately come out with something that you really liked, and there's a taste that you remember. And hopefully everybody would leave that concert with a favorite, someone mentioned that particular piece.
The one we just heard.
Yeah.
Conductors of any kind of ensemble, probably have ways, or at least imagine they have ways of gauging what the audience thinks of any given piece. And, of course, the best way is the applause, or the most obvious way is the applause you got. Another one is, do they come back to your concerts?
Yes.
So you seem to have them coming back in droves. But... Do you have ways of gauging what kinds of music your audience especially likes, or do you cater more to the tastes of the choir itself?
Well, that's really a good question. I don't really have a way to gauge what the audience likes, except that, like you said, they keep coming back. And they'll say, I really liked that you did this time. That was really neat. Or I loved to hear the Mozart. Or what was that piece from? I mean, I remember the first time we sang this arrangement of Somewhere from West Side Story. It's such a great choral arrangement. So you have a choir that sings well and sings a good choral arrangement. People don't come up and say, wow, you did a Broadway tune or a pop tune. It's just a little different feeling of the arrangements that you do. I also need to cater some to the choir, but I also need to enjoy the music.
Yourself.
Myself.
Sure.
And so that's what hits me. And then I take it to the choir and we read through, and I know that the audience really is going to like what we do.
How often do you take something to the choir and then after they sing it once or twice, put it away?
That doesn't happen very often, but I have a piece in my library called Warm Up by Leonard Bernstein. I've had it in the library for about probably 18 years. I've pulled it out 3 or 4 times, and after about 3 weeks, I've put it away and wonder why I ever bought it. But there was something very catchy about it, but I've never done the piece.
Why have you put it back each time?
I don't know. There's just something about it that doesn't catch me anymore.
Was it partly whatever your group's reaction?
Part of it.
Is it really hard to put together?
It is hard to put together. And I think what it comes down to, is it worth the time that I'm going to put into it to do that? And So
there is a piece. I mean, some of my listeners know that I've done some choral conducting over the years, and there was a piece for my choir locally that is one of those that I probably have read with them once. And it was always on my short list of things to do at certain times of the year, and I'd done it with a choir when I lived in Chicago twice, neither time successfully. And so I think it was the memory of that last lack of success that always made me put it back. And there were reasons, I think, for it. It was difficult in a certain way.
Well, and it kind of goes the other way, too. I had great success in my high school teaching with a piece called Music's Empire by Lloyd Fauch. It's a wonderful piece. It's from a collection of three. I wanted to try it with my group because it's a different feeling. And it was great. And we memorized it and sang it at St. Pat's. It's a wonderful piece, 8-part a cappella. And so that was worth the effort. It didn't seem like a high school piece because it really isn't. Mm. It just, you experiment and sometimes you fail, sometimes you don't. But I've had very few failures with the choir since its inception. So as far as the literature that we're doing.
And their ability to perform it.
Right.
I think you told me while we were listening to the last piece that the next one we're going to hear was a favorite of the choir from your concert just from this past November.
Yes, this is from a very popular composer right now who's in New York, who's Norwegian, Ole Yeo. And this is a piece called The Ground. And they loved it because it has such a classical sound to it. And we used a quartet, the Heritage String Quartet from Springfield.
Is this, I'm looking at the program and the text is in here. Is this in Norwegian?
No, actually it is not. It is in, well, the Kyrie, of course, is in Greek and then some Latin. Ole Yeo assigns titles to pieces that may seem sacred, but they're not really in a sacred context for him. They're more of mood pieces from his homeland. We did another one called Northern Lights, which is actually the Song of Solomon. So it's kind of deceptive. You have to look at his things carefully, but wonderfully written.
Well, let's give a listen. Opus 24, led by Milton Scott, performing Ole Yeo.
Yeo.
Yeo. Yeo. Spelled G-J-E-I-L-O.
He's Norwegian.
No idea. Yeah. All right. It's called The Ground from their concert of November 26th of last year.
Thank you.
Music by the Norwegian composer Ola Yeo. The Ground, it's called, sung by Opus 24, the Decatur-based choral ensemble, led by Milton Scott from their concert last November. They're giving their spring concert a week from tomorrow at Central Christian Church in Decatur. My guest has been the director, Milton Scott, and always appreciate hearing the music. I mean, you're right, it's a very beautiful piece of music and so beautifully sung. I could imagine why they liked it. Do you find that your choir tends to like the fast ones or the slow ones, or can't answer?
I can't answer that. I think they would wear out on singing a concert of all fast music, and this particular concert is probably more on has more slower pieces, this concert we're going to do. But I don't think they have a preference.
So, which actually surprises me. Somehow I think it is called Of Thee I Sing. It's mm-hmm. nearly all American pieces.
Right. But when you throw in some things like Deep River and some of these things, it's more of a soulful approach than Irving Berlin, you know. But we are doing a wonderful Stephen Foster medley, which is a lot of fun.
I'm sure that there's some lively songs
yep,
on that
it's one. Very good.
So nothing from Broadway?
Yes, well, nothing, I guess not, because we are doing Somewhere Over the Rainbow, but that's from the movie. So we're not doing a Broadway section, no.
It seems like one of those things that inevitably creeps into American programs of some kind yeah. or another.
The only two pieces that are not American that we're doing is Amazing Grace by Jackson Berkey, his arrangement, and Oh America by Brendan Graham, who writes for Celtic Women. And we're doing that.
So it's somebody else's, some other country person's take on things American
yeah.
in that case.
Yeah.
Well, that's fair enough. Sometimes those are pretty interesting perspectives, aren't they?
They are.
Musical or otherwise. Well, thanks, Milt, as always,
welcome.
For joining us on the show and for driving to Urbana from Decatur. And I hope the concert is splendid and as full as usual.
Well, thank you. I think we're very optimistic about it.
Central Christian Church is the location on West William Street in Decatur. Next Tuesday, May 13th, 7:30, Of Thee I Sing, presentation of the Decatur Choral Society. It's the community choir called Opus 24. This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. Our program comes to you on 90.9 WYNL-FM and HD Urbana with translator W293 AF Danville, NPR, classical music, and more for Central Illinois. WYNL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. Here's one more from last November's concert by Opus 24. It's what started, what opened that concert, Hernani Aguiar, his setting of Psalm 150.